All right, back in the Young Turks. Who is this? Ricky Strom is back. The Strom is coming.
Okay. How long have you been waiting for that one? It's a back pocket.
Okay, so.
Hello, guys.
Hey, Ricky, how you doing, brother?
Hello, Cenk.
Hello. Oh, Ricky's here.
Okay.
Don't get snoopy.
All right.
Get snoopy. We're kidding.
And okay. You're the same. You haven't changed.
Am I?
You're the exact same person.
In what way?
Like, you're still like the goofy, sometimes a little annoying Ricky. Like,
annoying
in like the best way possible.
It's
like
5 o'clock, okay? Mm-hmm. It hasn't even been 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me that I'm still the same goofy little brother, but kind of annoying guy.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, are you prepared for like years of this?
Oh, damn, that is a strong statement. So you're going to be loyal to TYT. You're going to be here for years.
I didn't say that. No, I'm kidding. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, a lot of you might be wondering, who the fuck is Ricky Strom?
Great question.
Okay, so if you're old school, you know Ricky. He was on TYT Sports, and he's back on TYT Sports now. If you're not old school, I just told you.
Well done.
So Ricky was with us all the way back in the Wilshire Studios.
Oh my God.
That's the famous studios that were not at all studios. It was just an office building that we converted into kind of a studio. The one that had the sewer that
water.
Dripped.
Toilet water that dripped
on us.
Let's be specific.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anna was sitting at that desk. Were you also sitting at the toilet water desk?
I was more of a roamer, actually,
okay,
in that office.
And then Buddy Roamer came in and we moved to better studios. There was a lot of roamers.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Anyway, no.
So, I drove past that office, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I get wonderful feelings of nostalgia whenever I drive by there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can't really get like the shit stained water out of your nose, but aside from that, yeah, totally. It's euphoria completely.
So that was before we moved to current TV studios, and then you were at current TV studios too, and then
I was.
Now you're back.
I was there for the smoke screen introduction as well that you had at current TV. Okay.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
We're not going to go in on that one? Okay.
No, we have.
Quite
a bit.
All right.
Okay. So you want me to go over it again? Okay. It was going to be a great idea. And it was supposed to be a joke, like a smoke-filled entrance. But like we did half a joke and it fell so fucking flat. It was so weird.
It was so weird.
Yes.
Where was the joke part of this? It was more like everyone clap. Everyone clap. So we were like, okay, let's just.
Yeah, no, you know what happened? My idea was, let's do like an over-the-top intro where I come out to like Eye of the Tiger, like dun, 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 and there's like a curtain and there's fucking smoke coming out and it's gonna be awesome, right? But then it got TV'd. Number one, we couldn't afford the rights to Eye of the Tiger. So then it was just like normal cheese music.
Also afford high definition from what I gather.
That's right. And then they told you guys to applaud. I was like, that wasn't part of the plan. And they meant well, right?
Of course.
So then it was like half an idea and like really weird.
Yeah. Right? But it was your idea?
The original smoke, the dun, dun, dun curtain thing, definitely my idea. Doesn't that have Cenk written all over it?
No. I mean, do you think so?
No, but then I was like, then we had to have a meeting where I was like, this is getting awkward.
Yeah, it was so awkward.
I agree.
It was so awkward. The first thing
we have to stop if this is gonna be the Young Turks on current TV is we have to get them to stop clapping when I come out because that's really weird.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was weirder though, the clapping or the smoke? Because the smoke was pretty. We had a smoke machine, like.
On both sides. It could have worked.
Such a bad idea.
You know what? I'm going to do it again.
No.
I'm going to do it again. Next studio we're in, smoke machines for everyone. When Ricky's doing sports, smoke machine.
Terrible idea.
Okay, but I do. Look, I will tell you this, and I'll put this on the record. It's now going to be on the record.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved the idea of coming into dramatic music.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple of like thoughts. As to what it would be, and coming down a hallway like a boxer or a wrestler or Bill Clinton, right? And like a Friday power panel, four hallways or four corners, and like dramatic music, or maybe even music you could dance to, and people Like they might even like dance their way into the studio.
Like
that's how insane.
No, I just got a production idea. We could never do it for money reasons, but like aggressive progressives, for instance, they can come in to Turn Down for What. Have you heard that song?
Oh yeah, of course.
It's Turn Down for What.
Turn Down for What.
Is that how old he is? You have to ask if he's heard of that mainstream ass song.
No, it's not that. Like yeah. I don't know. Like look, what he's
No, we're all so old. Well, I turned on the radio for the first time in like years the other day because my iPhone wasn't working, the plugin wasn't working, and I went to like old school
hip hop.
Right. It's not even hip hop, like R&B, whatever station in LA.
Yeah.
And they were playing
93.5, right?
Yeah. And they were playing Ludacris, and I'm like,
yeah,
oh my god,
dude.
Ludacris is now easy listening old music, right?
It's so devastating.
Like it's crazy. That's nuts. That's ludicrous.
So I wrote about this on Facebook yesterday, which is kind of funny because we're having this conversation. But there was a time that I went out to a club with Haas and his friends. This is like 2-3 years ago. And so we go to this club and his friends obviously are younger than me. And one of them, this song comes on by Too Short, Blow the Whistle comes on, right? And that, to me, that song came out last year. Like it's not that old. But anyway, all of a sudden it comes on. I'm like, oh, I love this song. And she turns to me, she's like, oh yeah, I love the oldies.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I'd kill you. I didn't like that. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I mean, the years just fly.
Is that your favorite Too Short song?
It's one of my favorite Too Short songs.
What's your other one?
The one that goes, getting it, getting while the getting is good. I don't know if I'm even singing it right, but
yeah. It was good enough for us.
Yeah, look, everything I've ever listened to is old school now, because I haven't listened to the radio in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I'm just old. And
right.
And to be fair, Anna did call the ambulance before that girl bled out. Okay, so she's all right. She recovered. It's fine.
The oldie. She's not even that much younger than me. Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
You know, look, TV's insane. Or the music rights. Like all of old media is insane. Because in order to get Eye of the Tiger, we had to pay like over $100,000 to be able to play it. But then we couldn't play it twice, but the show repeated it. So it was on at 7 o'clock, and then I think it was on at 10 or 11 o'clock or something, right? So then you like, then it became like some other monstrously large number, and it was like, okay, do we want to pay $100,000 to have it play once? I'm like, no, we don't want to. That's insane. Give me the $100,000.
Right.
Give it to me. I'll figure out something to do with it. Okay.
Right.
I'll hire like 7 more people.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's why we couldn't do it. And like that's
what is it with you and Eye of the Tiger, by the way? It's like it's a good song. It was a good song to one of the best sports movies of all time, but like it ends there. Like
no,
I don't
want
to. I don't think I need to hear it ever again, especially with you in a smokescreen entrance going into a news show.
You've never been more wrong, Ricky. Okay, so
that's debatable. But okay, yeah. Yes. What's your argument for why it's so good?
It's like one of the greatest songs of all time.
No, it's not.
Okay, I'm gonna give you two names, and then we're gonna be done with this conversation. Rocky, Hulk Hogan. Do I need to say anything?
Hulk Hogan is I'm a Real American, Jay.
No, he used to come into Eye of the Tiger until he couldn't afford it.
Okay, now here's why your argument is bullshit, okay? Because when we were in the 6363 office, we did this, and for everyone who doesn't know, but like we did the top 10 wrestlers of all time. And Cenk, in his like usual way, with his dramatic pauses and everything, would be like, number 6. Hulk Hogan, I am a real American, and you sang that song.
I did.
And that's why, thank you, and that's why I associate that song with Hulk Hogan and not Eye of the Tiger.
I have both Eye of the Tiger and I'm a Real American on my iPod.
No, that's
the fact that you still have an iPod is just
not
ridiculous.
IPod, on my iPhone.
Oh, yeah. Right.
There was, I think it was a post-game show where Cenk like decided that we were gonna watch the entire music video for I Am a Real American or whatever.
I know, but how great was it?
It was the most absurd thing I've ever seen
wonderful.
In my life.
It was so
what was in it? I've never
like
seen it.
Like Hulk Hogan wearing like spandex and like jumping
well,
around.
He did that in every
match. No, I know, but it was weird. It was
really love
weird.
It because they had like a green screen and they had the Hollywood sign behind him, the Statue of Liberty behind him, I think the Golden Gate Bridge, stuff. every part of the video was so wonderfully absurd. And my favorite thing of all time was when he headbutted the Soviet flag.
Oh, that's right.
Before he was going to wrestle, what is it, Boris Nikolov or whatever he was.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, when he headbutted the Soviet Union flag, I was like, yes, he is in fact a real American. Okay, and at the end of the video, he comes in on like a motorcycle and all these people rush him and they're like, ah. And Joy, I used to show it to her when she was like two or three, and she said, they love him. Okay, so.
That was unbelievable.
So, speaking of nostalgia, so Ricky back in the day used to have this annoying thing, and it, what is it called?
Was
it?
Oh, yeah.
No, no,
the Trololo song.
No, there was a. It's several. No, I'm talking about the.
The horn?
Yeah, the horn. And I do that on the show still to this day every once in a while. And it was annoying and it was terrible. But the funny thing is, it became associated with good times.
Yes.
So now I think, bah, 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 and I think like, ah, I've got all day.
Another thing that he used to do was when, let's say, the newsroom's relatively quiet, everyone's kind of like in their workspace trying to get shit done. And then out of nowhere, you would play the Trololo song, like as loud as possible. And like, yeah, it was annoying, but we all kind of secretly loved it. Yeah. And then when you were gone, we're like, aw.
There's no one annoying us, what happened?
Yeah, totally. So I'm just like the annoying kid that like happened to work at the Young Turks when I was 23 years old. The funny thing is, when I was, Bart's like, yeah, you were fucking annoying. Yeah, he's like nodding his head.
No, we're overemphasizing.
No, you're not. So when Cenk walked in today, actually, it's weird. Like he did the, and I was literally like a dog who hears his owner come home. Like, wait, was that for me? Was that for me? And like I see Cenk walk in, and it was, I don't know. Like I'm not trying to be schmoopy, but it was like a cool moment where. I was telling Jason this. First off, he gave me a hug. Sweaty hug, by the way.
Is there any other kind?
I know, seriously. But like, I was telling Jason this when we went to, of course, Chipotle. Have to go. It was.
You still like Chipotle? Wow.
Fuck yeah, I like Chipotle.
Yeah, do I still like Real American? Yeah.
Duh.
Do I still like Eye of the Tiger?
No.
I think we covered that I'm a real American.
That's true.
Okay, and yes, on Chipotle. Yes.
I was just telling Jason, like, it's weird how it feels so natural and so right to come back after over 3 years, like 3.5 years. And it still never really felt like I left. Like, there's more people here, obviously, and the staff has grown. But it was still this welcoming, again, not to use the word euphoric, but it was still just like this welcoming feeling that I had, and I still feel like I had.
Yeah.
And I think that goes into, again, not to be schmoopy, but like the family-like environment that we have here, how everyone just really respects the shit out of each other, the hustle that we all have, the mindset that we, not to be in sports terms here, but like the mindset that we all have where we just want to come in and do great work and just build the network as much as we possibly can. And it's something that I've dearly missed, but I'm glad that I'm a part of once again.
Wow, great to have you back, Ricky. Okay, that's the last you'll see of Ricky Strong. So go to TYT Sports.
That's fair.
No. Okay, Anna, before we wrap up, though, because I got an interview and all the and OT and stuff, so but you had something you wanted to.
Super quick story I wanted to share of me putting my foot in my mouth. So yesterday.
Rex Ryan would love that, by the way.
Oh, God,
he would love that.
So there's a football coach who has a huge foot fetish.
Ex-football coach.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
So now works for ESPN.
He can't wait to check out your pedicure channel that you're going to start. Okay, anyway.
All right, so I get home from work and I get a letter from the mortgage lender that I have, right? And I open it and it indicates that my hazard insurance has expired, and that if I don't send them documentation proving that I've renewed it as soon as possible, they are going to purchase insurance on my behalf, and I have to pay them for that insurance, right? And I was like, oh no. I work in news, and I fucking know what these lenders do. They want to try to foreclose on me. They want to fuck fuck me over, right?
Yeah.
So like I immediately go into like I go on the offensive. Like, you know what I mean? Like I
Hannah,
go
really?
Yeah.
That's gotta be a first.
So I call right away. It was after work hours, so of course no one answered. And I'm like, all right, I'll call first thing in the morning. Call them first thing in the morning today. And this lovely guy, poor guy, answers the phone. And I was like, yes, I received this letter indicating that my insurance supposedly has expired, but it hasn't. It doesn't expire until April of next year, and that you guys are allegedly gonna go out and buy insurance on my behalf and make me pay for it. I know what this is. I was like, I know what you guys are doing. You guys are gonna try to screw me with some weird technical issue, and then you're gonna foreclose on me, and you're gonna take my property away. I work in news. I know what you guys do. I'm just like yelling at this guy.
You know, you've become like the weird old cat.
No, no, 100%. 100%. So this guy, you know, he's just like this super calm black dude on the other line. Uh-huh. And he's like, I hear you, girl. No.
No way.
Swear to God. He's like, I hear you, girl. He's like, look, it's too early in the morning for you to be feeling like this. He's like, I'm gonna help you out. He's like, I'm gonna transfer you to the right department, and I'm gonna make sure that I communicate what the issue is so you don't have to repeat yourself. But first, I'm gonna give you a moment to just decompress.
No way.
And I was like,
wow.
I was like, I like you. Okay. So I was like, that immediately disarmed me, right? And so I was like, you know, thanks, sorry. I'm frustrated. My insurance has not expired and this is bullshit. And I just, you know how these lenders are. These lenders are shady. And I didn't, you know, sign up with this lender. My mortgage got sold like a week after I closed escrow. Like
that's always what happens.
And that's always what happens, right? And I was like, I'm just very, you know, protective of my issue here. And he's like, okay, don't worry. So he transferred me over to the right person, and then I found out that, so I have two insurance policies. One is homeowner's insurance, and then the hazard insurance is purchased by the HOA that did expire.
Mm.
And so luckily they renewed it, and I'm gonna get them the proper documentation. But I was like, okay, my job is making me crazy, and I just need to fucking take it easy, right?
You know, he did the strategy that you're supposed to do with kids. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is like when I do this with my kids, like when Joy's crying, I'm like, it hurts, doesn't it? And she's like, yeah, it does. And that like immediately disarms her.
Totally.
Like, don't say like, hey, it's gonna be all right.
Yeah.
She's like, no, it's not gonna be all right. I'm hurt, dog.
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
ask me if I'm all right. Right? So you're like, it hurts, doesn't it? She's like, yeah, it does. I'm like, okay, well, like let's try to figure out how to solve it. I'm like, I'm gonna hoo-hoo it. Okay, and Joy, I'm gonna ask you about it tomorrow, and you think you're gonna remember that it was your ankle that hurt? And she's like, no.
Aw, okay. Joy's best.
Okay, so with you, he's like,
yeah,
it hurts,
yeah.
doesn't it? You're like, yeah, it does. Okay.
As Anna was hyping up the story, I only heard one thing in my head.
See, she has the eye of the tiger.
Totally. She had the eye of the tiger.
Yeah. And hurry up and stop that before we have to pay $100,000.
Yeah. We can cut that out.
Yeah, yeah. But,
Fantastic.
Aww.
That's awesome.
This drama's here. Okay. All right. We got to wrap it up. So, God bless. Ricky, good to have you back, brother. Okay.
Thank you, Jake.
All right. Everybody check
Anna.
Out sports.
We love you, Ricky. Okay. We're happy to have you back.
Okay.
Happy to be back.
All right. It's Shmoopy Overload. We got to go. We'll see you tomorrow. All right. So this OT is live for the members. So for those of you who just watched the post-game live, okay. We're going to do a fun overtime segment for you guys here. Slash not fun because some of these stories make me angry. Anyways, let's do it. Let's go over here. Okay. So this is an unfortunate story about profiling. It is an innocent Muslim American family, but they were not treated that way. Now I hear from some on the right that, oh no, there's no such thing as racism or bigotry. That doesn't exist. Well, let's find out the story of the Ali family and see if that's true or not. So first of all, let me show you this Sattar Ali's family. Well, they look lovely. They look like they just had a graduation. They're part of the America right there, right? So And they lived in Michigan, and they had moved back to Kansas, where they actually were originally from. So let me tell you how the story begins. Sattar Ali, who moved to the United States in 1993, took a check for $151,000 from the sale of his family's old house in Michigan to Wichita's Emprise Bank, as he told local news station KAKE. He brought verification documents along with him, but a few minutes after he first presented tellers with the check, he was in handcuffs. What? Now, look, I guess I'm naive, and partly because I've never had a $151,000 check personally, I wouldn't have known to bring in verification. I'd be like, this is my lucky day, I've got a check, I'm giving it to you, you're a bank. I assume you're going to take it. I wouldn't have even thought twice about it. But maybe he's had different experiences that made him realize, no, just smart and careful thing to do is to bring in some verification. Hey, this is where I got the check, and can you please deposit it for me? And he brought that in, and they're like, yeah, don't care. We're going to have you arrested. Stunning. Okay. So Ross Story continues to explain. After being taken outside, Ali discovered his wife Hadil and their 15-year-old daughter Habra were in the back seat of the police car waiting for him. What? Why did you arrest his daughter? That's insane. Let alone his wife. I mean, this is all right, total madness, but it's about to get worse. Sometime during their 3-hour detainment, Ali said police called his 11-year-old son's school to tell them to hold him because his parents had been arrested. Oh, good, because we didn't traumatize the family enough. Let's go target the 11-year-old kid in his school and mess him up too. Now look, are there fraud checks from time to time? Of course there are. Is there fraud involved in checks? Should the banks be careful? Of course. But is this a thing that happens a lot, where somebody comes in with a $151,000 check, which they don't ask for in cash? If he said, I'd like to cash this $150,000 check, if I was the bank, I would do some due diligence on that too. Of course, he just said, I'd like to deposit it, I'll see you tomorrow. I mean, you could have taken your time, you could have investigated, you have his address, you know where to find him. No, they had to do an all points bulletin like, oh my God, there's a guy named Sattar Ali, he brought in a check, hurry up and arrest his whole family. What is he going to do with the check? He deposited it. Was he going to take it out and use it for bombs? But he brought it to you, he didn't take it from you. Okay, so again, the skeptics out there or the right wingers who like to be blind to bigotry will say, no, it could happen to anybody. I mean, it could have been Bob Smith who went into the bank, and they would have went and found his 11-year-old son in the middle of Wichita and made sure to tell him that his parents had been arrested, and they would have grabbed his 15-year-old daughter. I don't think they would have thought twice about it. Look, we're never going to know for sure. And so, you know, if you want overwhelming proof that the bank teller and the bank manager were like, that dude's Muslim, he's freaking me out, I don't know why he has this check, you're probably not going to find a memo like this. But for most rational people, we know what happened here. And Sattar Ali says, no one told me why I was being arrested until we were being released. They didn't read me rights or anything. He said, we were devastated, terrified, crying the whole time. We had no idea what the arrest was for, because they're so dangerous, you can't even tell them what they're being arrested for. By the way, he's an American, he has rights like every other American. If you're going to arrest a guy, let alone a false arrest, read him his rights, he has rights. I wonder why they assumed that they shouldn't read him his rights as an American. This is all probably a coincidence. They probably do this to white folks all the time in the middle of Kansas. And Ali says one more thing. He says, let's assume I made a mistake and gave them a bad check. Why would they arrest my wife and daughter? And I open that to anyone who thinks this was perfectly innocent. Why on God's green earth, no matter what race or religion he is or what background he is, are you arresting his 15-year-old daughter and his wife? No, a panic set in there, and you know why the panic set in. Because we have an insane right wing in this country who has scared the living bejesus out of people in the middle of the country, saying Sharia law is coming, they're coming to get you. Oklahoma went to go pass a law, and did pass a law saying we will not have Sharia law in Oklahoma. Really? You don't say, of course you won't have Sharia law, because there are barely any Muslims there, and they live in America where that's unconstitutional, you can't put your religion into the law. There's a million reasons why the Muslims are not coming over to take over Tulsa or Wichita, but people are in a panic. And fear and demagoguery work. So they see a guy come in and his wife's in the parking lot and his daughter is, and they have a head covering. They're like, oh my God, this guy's trying to give us money. Wait, you're a bank. And so they had to go through this whole trauma. Now, what's his real story? Ali, who along with his wife and children are American citizens, lived in Wichita from 1998 to 2008 and was returning to get his doctorate in engineering from Wichita State, where his eldest son is a freshman. Boy, that does sound very dangerous. You know, last thing from Ali, actually, he said, I would expect this in the 1950s, not now. No, actually, that's not really that true. He came into the country a little bit later than my family did. So when my dad came in the 1960s, actually, America was wonderfully open to immigrants, including Muslim immigrants. Now, my dad's Turkish, he's now an agnostic, but back then he was nominally Muslim. He didn't care too much about it, didn't practice too much, but for all anybody knew, he was, right? And people were wonderful to him. They took him to see the president. He got to meet and shake the hand of John F. Kennedy within a couple months of arriving. People would volunteer to have him stay at their house. A wonderful American couple said to him and to my mom, who were newlyweds, hey, do you want to come and vacation with us in our nice beach house in Miami for a week? No, this country actually used to be way better to Muslims, way better to immigrants overall. It's because of the current demagoguery in America that you've got people afraid and lashing out in completely irrational ways. So in some ways, unfortunately, we've gone backwards. So just because discrimination doesn't happen to you doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It does exist, and unfortunately it happened to the Ali family here. And I would hope that they would take their business to a different bank and that the authorities would apologize for arresting them, detaining them for 3 hours, let alone arresting his family members and panicking his kids over something that could have easily been investigated behind the scenes calmly. You could have just asked them for more verification. Instead, they had a fire alarm here, and we're pretty sure we know why that happened. And if you don't, I think you're being blind to the reality of, unfortunately, today's America. Look, I'm an eternal optimist. I think we can get past it, and I think we're going to see much better days ahead. And I think we're going to be great to immigrants again and understand the core of what makes this country wonderful, which is that we are open to immigrants. But we do have to get past it because it is the reality of today. Okay, so now let me go to the establishment story. Okay. So one of the greatest offenses you can give in Washington is to be uncivil to a member of the establishment. And General John Kelly, chief of staff for Donald Trump, is definitely a member of the establishment. He's chief of staff, but beyond that, he was a general. And in Washington, you bow to the generals. The military-industrial complex is awesome, and they always have good intent. That's what I hear on TV. That's what you're about to hear on Morning Joe. But first, let me tell you what Congressman Luis Gutierrez said about John Kelly and why they were all a flutter on Morning Joe. Congressman Gutierrez said, General Kelly, when he was the head of Homeland Security, lied straight to the face of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus about preventing the mass deportations of Dreamers. Now, as chief of staff, this former general is executing the plan to take away their lifeline and taking steps to criminalize young people who live and work here legally. General Kelly is a hypocrite who is a disgrace to the uniform he used to wear. He has no honor and should be drummed out of the White House along with the white supremacists and those enabling the president's actions by, quote, just following orders. Now, I agree with the sentiment of and the facts behind Congressman Gutierrez. I don't think anyone actually denies the facts. John Kelly at Homeland Security did say that they would not kick people out of the country, and now he is enabling kicking those same people out of the country. You can say that call that a miscommunication, call it a lie. I think it's fair. Now he is a little vituperative on the dishonoring and disgracing the uniform and has no honor, etc. I live in a glass house. I say strong comments like that all the time, and I don't think it's a big deal. He's understandably very angry about the potential of 800,000 people being kicked out of this country who are productive members of our society and who everybody, including General John Kelly, said would be protected. So he's, I think, very justifiably angry. But in Washington and New York, in elite circles, you could bomb civilians, you could start wars, you could rob people blind, you could do taxes for the rich that take from the middle class, redistribute wealth to the top. You could do, and you could kick out dreamers and ruin their lives, send them to countries they never even lived in or grew up in. You could do all of those terrible things. But don't you dare be uncivil to another member of the establishment. So before I go to the clips here, I just want to give you a sense of context. Look, we asked our audience in a different context about General John Kelly, whether he should stay or go. And you guys actually said that he should stay. So the question was, should John Kelly resign in protest over things like Charlottesville, or should he stay and keep Trump in check? And from what I remember, and that's tytnetwork.com/chiefs of staff, it's about 2/3 of you, he said, look, as heinous as Donald Trump is, he should stay because he is a stabilizing influence on Donald Trump, which I think is true. Nonetheless, he did at a minimum mislead the Congressional Hispanic Caucus and many others about the DREAM Act. And he is a right winger, don't fool yourself. And now he is going to execute this policy, which is in the congressman's estimation and my estimation, a terrible, horrific policy that is going to hurt hundreds of thousands of people. But they will not focus on that in this clip. Instead, they will focus on how terrible Gutierrez is for besmirching the reputation of someone who was a general and is a good friend of ours that we sometimes share hors d'oeuvres with. Let's watch.
Where do we begin? I mean, I served with the congressman and like him personally, but where do we begin?
He should be ashamed about,
disgraceful, outrageous words that he used against a man who's given his entire life and his son to this country in service and uniform.
Look, I don't want to get into his family and the tragedies, etc. Because Congressman Gutierrez wasn't talking about that at all. You brought that up. He didn't bring that up. But these disgraceful comments. Wait a minute, you're just now calling him disgraceful. So why aren't you just as guilty as he is? But I mean a general. Here's more from Mike Barnicle.
He should be ashamed of himself and he should apologize, but he won't because of the partisan, polarized nature of Washington, D.C. But I mean, Chief of Staff Kelly presides. He's absolutely right. I mean, Congressman Gutierrez belongs to a body of people who work maybe 2 hours a week. You know, I mean, they're going to work legislatively, I think, what, 4 days this month, the remainder of the month, to get things done. They've had DACA on their desks for over a year and they've done nothing. And that's his retort. Please, stop it.
Stop it. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. That is a member in good standing of the establishment. Look, two things about this. One, you want to talk about the substance at all? So General John Kelly should not be ashamed of himself for ruining the lives of 800,000 people. But Gutierrez should be ashamed of himself for being uncivil to another member of the elite. So priorities here, guys. And then now Barnicle is worried that they're only working 2 hours a week and 4 days for the rest of the month. We've been talking about that 1,000 times on the show. These congressmen have the cushiest jobs in the world. They hardly ever work. All they ever do is dial for dollars. And now finally Morning Joe, the cornerstone of the establishment, turns around and goes, did you know that congressmen don't work very much? Of course! When we said that, you're like, oh, you are besmirching the reputation of the honorable gentleman in Congress. But now that he's been uncivil to a person who's higher up in the establishment food chain, now they realize, oh my God, did you know the congressmen don't work that much? Yeah, that's what we've been telling you for years. The establishment is so unbearable and they don't see it. They have no idea what they just did there. They have no idea that they do it over and over again. Wars are fine, killing civilians are fine, everything is fine. As long as you are not uncivil to one of their friends, who's part of the elite. That's Morning Joe 101, that's television 101, that's establishment 101. Okay, last story for you guys for today, okay? This story amuses me because now Republicans are beginning to realize, oh my God, Donald Trump is so incompetent, he might not even get tax reform done. of course. Tax reform is nonsense. It's not reform at all. They're going to cut taxes to the bone. And the other part of the story that's amusing is that they're like, I don't know if we can cut taxes that much. This is really monstrous. All right, so let me go to Politico here to give you some background. They explain congressional Republicans came back to Washington ready and eager to work on tax reform, but they're still missing one thing, a plan. That's already funny. That's triggered frustration among rank and file lawmakers who feel pressure from President Donald Trump to pass a tax reform bill, but have seen no plans. So they're like, wait, I know he bungled everything else, but we're going to get tax cuts for the rich, right? He still doesn't have a plan? Of course he doesn't have a plan. He's an idiot. I like that you just dawned on you and you're like, wait, wait, this is important. This tax cuts for my donors. In fact, Dave Brandt, the guy who ran as a populist when he first won, is now totally in bed with the elite, says, this time around, there is no room for error. This has got to be a home run. I love the panic. I love the smell of panic in the morning in Washington, like, this is tax cuts for the rich. We can't screw this up. There's no room for error. They'll take our donations away. Then we'll be out of a job. Okay. You know, Dave Brandt ran the first campaign when he unseated Eric Cantor against the banks. Hey, you know what? The banks are ripping you off and stuff. Now he's like, the banks are awesome. The elite and the rich and the billionaires are awesome. We got to give them a tax cut. Donald Trump, don't screw this up. So Newt Gingrich goes on TV in a similar theme here. He has a slightly different take on it. Let's watch.
Trump is a Republican, but he doesn't get up in the morning and say, my number one job is to build the Republican Party. I think he sincerely is wrestling with how do you make America great again. I think he was very frustrated coming out of the summer with the inability to get things done on a partisan basis. And I think there's a little bit of floundering here that I think may be creative and healthy. Mm. We are in a different world. None of us fully know how the next 6 months are going to work out. I think for the Republicans, there's one absolute total imperative, and that is to pass a tax cut by Thanksgiving. And I think Trump has every reason to be worried that they won't be able to do it.
Okay, so there's three parts to that. The second part is awesome. First, you have to fluff up Donald Trump in order to get him to pay attention. Now, Donald Trump is busy making America great again. Oh, yeah, yeah, you're so unbearable. Okay, then he goes on to say my favorite thing. He's like, there's a little bit of floundering here, but that is creative and healthy. He turned floundering into a compliment. Like, Donald, you're doing a great job of floundering. Oh, your floundering is so creative. Whew, I feel healthier already. And then he turns around, though, the real reason he's on TV. Now, remember, Donald, because I know you watch Fox News, that's why I'm on here. We have to pass the tax cut. That's how we all get paid. Tax cuts are important. Message delivered. I got it. Back to Politico. House Ways and Means Committee member says, it is frustrating and concerning that we don't have the details, and yet we're going to be asked in 60 days to vote on something. What did I tell you? He's incompetent. There is no plan. There's no three-dimensional chess. He's not keeping his plan secret because he's going to come out at the end and be like, surprise, here we go. Here's my great plan. Look, this is so important. This is them like trying to beat him up in the press, but gently. It's going to get in motion. Let's go, right? So they'll eventually have one and they'll eventually pass one because all of their political lives depend on it, not because of the voters. They serve the donors, and this is priority number 1 through 99 for the donors. Okay, so more from Politico. They explain there are still disagreements among negotiators in closed door meetings over crucial issues, including the corporate tax rate, with President Donald Trump pushing for a 15% rate that others see as unrealistic because of its cost. Now, there's more issues, but I want to just stop there for a second. His plan, that Trump's plan, is to cut taxes for the rich. Almost all of it goes to the rich. Actually, it raises taxes on the middle class in some ways. It's a $7 to $8 trillion, not million, not billion, $1 trillion tax cut, $7 to $8 trillion. So even other Republicans who love trillions of dollars in tax cuts are like, but wait a minute, the deficit is going to be so gigantic that our decades long lie about how we care about the deficit it might get a little overexposed here. Like 15%? That's a lot, Donald. Because cutting from 35 to 15% is such a monstrous giveaway to the swamp and to the multinational corporations that fund the Republican Party. All right, more of their objections. There's a lack of a clear path forward on the 2018 budget, which will be used as a vehicle for tax reform. In other words, we're just going to blow a hole in the 2018 budget so large we can't hide it. And then finally, allowing businesses to immediately write off the cost of equipment and other big investments. That's another giant giveaway to corporations. So they're like, okay, you get to deduct all that stuff right away. Remember the original plan was, no. We're not doing tax cuts. We're doing tax reform. So yeah, sure, it looks like we're cutting their taxes, but we are going to take away other loopholes so that it balances out and then it has no effect on the deficit. Now they're like, okay, we're going to do the giant tax cuts, and Trump would also like to add loopholes in. A little hard to get away with this one. It's so hard that even Republicans are pushing back. Senator John Thune says, the president's been out there talking about a 15% rate. The House has talked about 20, but to get it down from 35 to 20, it's about $100 billion per point. So even he is recognizing, look man, I can do the math on that. Going from 35 to 20 at $100 billion per percentage, that's $1.5 trillion. He'd like to go down to 15, that's $2 trillion. And that is way conservative. Like I said, the real nonpartisan economists who have looked at it say, no, it's $7 to $8 trillion. So, but for Thune, he's like, I don't know how to put a $2 trillion hole in the deficit and then pretend I'm for balanced budgets. He's like, help me out. He's like, can we go to 20? By the way, if they went to 20 instead of 15, there would be a monstrous tax cut for the rich. Monstrous. But this is how they move the Overton window. This is how the right wing operates. They go, okay, 35% is too high. The effective tax rate is actually in the teens because there's so many loopholes. They don't pay those taxes. So many of the Fortune 500 companies pay zero in taxes. Some of them get money back. They hide their money offshore. They do all those tricks. They're not going to take those tricks away. They're just going to cut their taxes. But they're saying there's might be a bounce of reason to even what Trump is suggesting. Now, if Trump executed it right, it would be a classic Republican strategy. You say 35, I say 15. Okay, fine, let's do a deal on 20 or 25. Holy cow, you just actually cut trillions of dollars in taxes and can't cover for it, right? But part of their problem is that Trump is not doing it competently. So he's bungling it, and I'm sorry, he's being creative. He's creatively floundering, going, I don't know, let's just give the rich everything. Why don't we just give them everything? I'm rich, let's just give it to them. And the other Republicans are like, ay, ay, ay. So Paul Ryan's saying, look, let's just do a huge tax cut to 22.5%. That's really, really low. And Ryan said on the 15% number, he's like, those numbers are really hard to make work. The reality is his proposal of 22.5% is also impossible to make work. They don't care about balanced budgets. They never cared about the deficits. They just want to be able to get away with one of the greatest American robberies of our lifetimes. They think Trump is too stupid. He's asking for too much, and they won't be able to get away with it. They're like, look, we just take a couple of $1 trillion off the table and give it to our donors, and we'll be able to cover that up. Get on board, you schmuck. That's the debate the Republican Party's having. But either way, you're about to be robbed. All right, that's your overtime for today. I got an interview with Larry Lessig in a couple of minutes, so let's go do that, okay? I'll see you there.